Today's news.
Hello, and welcome to Old News, the programme and podcast which looks at news stories of the day through the papers of yesterday. This week, Douglas Head. Back in the news again, as it was recently quoted on Manx Radio's news that the government were looking again at proposals to make Douglas Head a conservation area. Douglas Head, of course, being a centre point for the island's capital and for tourism for, well over a century, considerably longer, I would have thought. So oft in the news, with similar sorts of stories, perhaps. We go right back to 1890. The Douglas Head Marine Drive Limited is the piece entitled in the Isle of Man Times of Wednesday, December the 10th, The Rights of the Public on Douglas Head. Whether for weal or woe, that great phrase again, the Douglas Head Marine Drive will, within a measurable space of time, be an accomplished fact, and indeed it will probably be nearing completion before the majority, even of residents, realise the transformation which it will bring on Douglas Head and its vicinity. During the last few weeks, steps have been taken both in the active prosecution of the work and in arriving at an understanding with the several parties whom the company have to make agreements with for land. Dealing with the latter point first, we have it on undeniable authority that the company have finally concluded the agreements with Major Goldie Taubman, HK, and with the commissioners for the land which they will require to form the first portion of the road, and a formal order to commence work of the construction forthwith has been sent to the contractor, Mr. Stowell, of Heckmondwick of Yorkshire. In the meantime, the work of surveying and setting out the road in readiness for the contractor to start work has been going on for several weeks. This work is being carried out by Mr. G. B. Jerram, the company's engineer, and his assistants. Already about a mile or two of the work have been accomplished, and the surveying has reached a point almost as far as Walbury, so this is going along the Marine Drive, of course. It is generally known that the Marine Drive will start close to the point where the present Douglas Head Road abuts on the public recreation ground, starting at a point about 100 yards from Mr. Woodcock's photographic studio. It runs along the fringe of the rocks on the seaside of the present open ground until it reaches Major Goldie Taubman's wall. From that point, where a ravine has to be crossed, a benching will be put in to carry the road across the steep brows. Pigeon Cove is crossed by a light iron suspension bridge of 100 feet span. The general gradient undulates along the whole distance and is around 1 in 30. At Walbury, owing to the steepness of this rocky headland, some difficulty will be experienced and a cutting will have to be made around 40 feet high out of the face of the rocks. The scene from this portion of the road will be very striking. Then from Walbury the road passes to Kerristal, where a small culvert will be made for crossing the ravine, and it will then come along the cliffs at Port Sodrick and running behind the Port Sodrick Hotel, debouch, what a wonderful word, on the road going up the glen. The Marine Drive, construction 1890. Still there, sadly, not been able to drive on it for some time, have we? Although I do seem to recall not that long ago, 20-odd years ago, 25 years ago, there was talk about making it good and safe for road traffic. At the time, I'm sure it was only going to cost £3 million or so. Would that have been money well spent? It seems very little these days, doesn't it, to have kept it as an open route. But perhaps you think it's better as a walking route. We go to 1893, the Isle of Man Times, Tuesday, September the 12th. A wonderful piece which goes on at some length. I'll give you a précis of it. Mr. G. W. Foote on Douglas Head. Under the title The Battle of Douglas Head, Mr. Foote in The Free Thinker describes his conflict with the powers that be in Douglas on the occasion of his recent visit. Mr. Foote, on his arrival in Douglas, seems to have had great difficulty in getting possession of a copy of the bylaws governing the use of Douglas Head. The only copy he could discover, he tells us, was in the pocket of Mr. Quirk, the elderly guardian, custodian, or curator of Douglas Head, as Mr. Foote describes him. When Mr. Foote and his friend Mr. Westball called on this official, he declined to show them the bylaws, but afterwards, on Mr. Nesbitt's direction, he did so. Mr. Foote, on considering the bylaws, construed them to mean that the delivery of a lecture could only be a constructive crime, but it was hinted to him that anyone who attempted to speak on Douglas Head without the permission of the commissioners would be bundled off unceremoniously. Not wishing to cause unnecessary friction, he wrote the following letter to the town clerk. This is dated August the 29th, 1893. Gentlemen, I beg to apply to you for permission to deliver an address on the Bible at Douglas Head on Sunday afternoon next September the 3rd. A collection could be taken up after the address on behalf of the funds of the hospital, and the amount thus realised would be paid over to the proper recipients by my friend Mr. W. Westwell of Manchester, with whom I am staying here and who is well known to most of the leading inhabitants of Douglas. Failing permission to deliver my address on Douglas Head, I beg to apply for permission to deliver it on the shore in front of the town, where I observe other meetings are held at which addresses are delivered on religious subjects. Yours obediently, G. W. Foote. He received the following reply, helpful as ever. The Town Commissioner's Office, September 1st, 1893. Dear Sir, permission has already been given to the Douglas clergy to occupy the head on Sunday next for a religious service in aid of the hospital. Therefore, the commissioners have to decline to grant you permission. As regards the shore, I have to refer you to Bylaw 25, which provides that no person can hold a meeting within 20 yards of the promenade. But the commissioners decline to give any permission. I am, yours faithfully, T. H. Nesbitt, Clerk to the Commissioners. Mr. Foote, commenting on this remarkable letter, said, "My belief is, and it is founded on pretty good evidence, that this permitted religious service was hurriedly made up for the occasion, so that the commissioners might have a plausible excuse for giving me a refusal without assigning their reason." I think he's probably right. Anyway, I had announced I would do a lecture on Douglas Head, and I meant, if possible, to keep my word. He then goes on to say how he went to see Mr. Brown, the owner of the Isle of Man Times, who he described as a man of great ability and a true reformer, who laughed at this right of the commissioners to decide what views should be ventilated on Douglas Head, and put a piece in his paper. So Mr. Foote went on to actually give his lecture on the eventful Sunday afternoon, as he describes it. He said he withdrew to some distance from the clergyman who was holding what he calls a permitted meeting, but directly he began to speak, a number of indiscreet and unmanly religionists in the crowd began to interrupt him in a very un-English fashion, and a party of them, who at any rate were enemies of free speech, began to sing a hymn. Mr. Foote then withdrew to a little distance and for an hour or so addressed a great crowd of people who had assembled to hear him. His address was a discursive one on free thought, and at the close he asked them to remember it was an atheist who had first challenged the arbitrary power of the Douglas Town Commissioners and struck a fatal blow at the ridiculous superstition that they had a right to exercise an invidious control over public meetings. Great stuff. Need more of that. Bible meetings on Douglas Head. I'm sure they'd be popular today. In 1944, now we go, the Ramsey Courier, Friday, November the 3rd, airman crashes on Douglas Head. I must admit, I couldn't remember this sad case. An inquest held on Friday into Lieutenant Robert Shaw Payton, a young airman who lost his life through a plane which he piloted crashing onto Douglas Head. Evidence was given showing that under instructions from his squadron commander, he took off on a normal flight, and very shortly afterwards the plane banked steeply, dived into the ground, and with an explosion burst into flames. It crashed at a point close to the Douglas Head Incline Railway, which was over towards Port Sodrick, I think, wasn't it? Deceased sustained multiple injuries, and in the opinion of a service doctor who gave evidence, death appeared to have been instantaneous. The accident was witnessed, among others, by Mr. F. W. Cubbon, a crane driver employed by the Harbour Commissioners, Mr. W. C. Halsell, Secretary to the Board of Agriculture, who was on the Battery Pier in connection with the unloading of a shipment of cattle, and Police Sergeant A. L. Cortine on duty at the same pier. When Sergeant Cortine got to the scene, the body was still on fire, we hear, but Lieutenant Payton was obviously dead. The plane had been certified as airworthy when it left. Deceased was in good health and had good eyesight, and the engine was functioning properly during the flight and running as the plane crashed. But Mr. Cubbin said it was flying very low and seemed to be just above a barbed wire fence on Douglas Head. The head itself was clear of fog at the time and visibility was good. The reason for the crash, which was seen by hundreds of people, was that the pilot, in the course of the dive, failed to pull the machine clear of the deck. A sad story, and must admit I didn't realise there had been an air crash on Douglas Head that recently. If we go to 1949, 5 years later, and after the war, of course, Friday, June the 3rd, Douglas Head reopening. Popular rendezvous for all visitors to the island is Douglas Head, and it is announced that the portion of the Douglas Head Hotel, renovated after the disastrous fire last September, Yes, of course, a big fire there, is to be reopened tomorrow, Saturday morning. The Swanee Minstrels are to be on the island for the season. Don't think you get away with those now. And will give concerts each morning and afternoon, commencing on June the 27th. The steam ferry Thistle will commence running between the Victoria and Battery piers tomorrow afternoon. Douglas Head Entertainers, we read in 1955 in the Ramsey Courier, Friday, July the 8th. Though Douglas Head is without its minstrels this season, there is a fine band of artists in the Douglas Head Entertainers, led by the old favourite comedian Harry Orchid. And the new variety show is proving just as popular with visitors to the Head. The company gives shows twice daily, 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. But perhaps beginning to get towards the end of the Head becoming such a popular place for visitors to come to watch shows with the minstrels, now perhaps somewhat passé, no longer there. By 1956, the following year, Friday, February the 10th, we read in the Examiner, Douglas Head Incline Railway goes, and a picture of the works being carried out with workmen there, basically demolishing the building or the walls around the top of the incline railway. It says the two carriages were pulled by a cable up and down the 200 yards of the steep side of the Head for about 40 years. It says the Douglas Head Incline Railway and buildings were demolished this week after being taken over by the Douglas Corporation. And the picture shows the work in progress. It goes on to say the railway was owned for many years by Mr. Richard M. Broadbent of Garwick, up to 1922 when Douglas Head Incline Railway Company was formed. Of this company, Mr. Broadbent was the principal shareholder and it operated the shortest railway in Britain up to the war. The company was liquidated recently, the buildings and land turned over to Douglas Corporation for a nominal sum through Mr. J.B. Bolton, MHK, who was the liquidator. Sad end to the incline railway on Douglas Head. You can still see some of the footings, I think, here and there if you walk along there. 1959 in the Examiner, Thursday, January the 15th, Douglas Head Concert Pitch, a development in the region of Douglas Head, which may bring prosperity to the area during the visiting season, was under consideration by the Parks Committee of Douglas Town Council. This was stated at a meeting of the council yesterday by the committee chairman, Councillor F. Farragher. He was replying to a move by Councillor C. E. Burke to have excluded from a list of possible work schemes for next winter the clearance of the concert pitch site at Douglas Head at a cost of £535. Councillor Burke urged the pitch should be retained and some provision made for catering for the family type of visitor. Changing times, I think, here, isn't it? Use it as a children's outdoor theatre, he suggested, with the puppets and illusionists and instrumentalists. Councillor Edward Collister, supporting, said he hoped Douglas Head would always be a summer attraction. Surely, he exclaimed, there is a future for it with all the money that has been spent on Marine Drive. Well, yes, I think he had a good point there. Councillor R.C. Stephen said he believed it was necessary to provide some form of entertainment on Douglas Head, but felt that the old concert pitch was not the place for it. He assured the council the Parks Committee were not blind to the need for an alternative pitch. This was being considered and a recommendation might be put forward in due course. The council agreed the clearance of the concert pitch site be included in a list of six schemes which they recommended to the Finance Committee for carrying out next winter, subject to a suitable government financial assistance being given. And finally, 1960, a plea for Douglas Head bus. This might have echoes with a plea for a bus down to Craigneish, perhaps, in recent times. A plea for a bus service to Douglas Head failed at a meeting of Douglas Town Council on Wednesday. It was made on a report by the Tramways Committee regarding a request by the Douglas Head Lighthouse Keeper for the provision of a school bus from the Head for three children who would be attending school after the summer holidays. The Tramways Department manager had informed the committee that at present the school bus only went as far as Douglas Head Quarry and that it would be uneconomic for the service to continue to the Head for only three children. The committee asked the council to approve their decision that the school bus service could not be extended to Douglas Head and the matter referred to the Education Authority for their consideration. Councillor T.A. Corkish moved that the committee's report on this matter be referred back for reconsideration. Apart from the three children concerned, he thought that this was a good opportunity to get in with a bus service to Douglas Head, even if it was only a two-hourly service. Many elderly people lived in the Douglas Head area, he said, and to get to and from the town they had to climb about 100 steps or use the steep hill at the gasworks. He realised such a bus service might not be economical, but he failed to see if some parts of the town could have an uneconomical service, why Douglas Head could not have one also. However, the proposal to refer the report back was lost. Without a division, the committee's decision was confirmed. Buses to tourist sites, nothing new. As indeed is anything going on up at Douglas Head, always been in the news for certainly well over a century. Who knows what will become of it in the future? Talk, of course, of reusing the Douglas Head site down by where the minstrels used to perform, although that has yet to come to fruition. Will it come to fruition in years to come? We wait to see. Until next week, cheerio. You're gonna be yesterday's news.